CBS Sports Radio.
Mike Feldman and Pete Hoffman are here from the great show, as I said earlier, Outside the Cage.
Come see me, Blast Arrow, baby, let's go. The Blast Express is going home, UFC Hawaii, Juju, let's go.
WFAN's Outside the Cage.
Outside the Cage.
Outside the Cage, which is growing like crazy.
This is Outside the Cage with Ike Feldman and Pete Hoffman on CBS Sports Radio.
This is Outside the Cage with your host, Ike Feldman, Pete Hoffman.
What up?
Follow us at underscore Outside the Cage. He is at Ike underscore CBS.
Should I even say your handle? I might get to trouble online, man. I might get people to chase you down the street.
Again, yeah, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Maybe do it just in case they want to. I enjoy the banter. I do. I do it. At the Hoff WFAN. I'm going to just say it myself. After this weekend's show, someone tracked me down and was calling me David Hasselhoff. He wants his name back, blah, 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 blah.
The figure who did track you down, just according to his profile picture, you know, a lot of people can hide behind their social media presence. He would kick our ass.
Yeah, he was not hiding, and he definitely kicked my butt for sure. But again, listen, I like the debate. That's what it comes down to. We were debating this past weekend on CBS Sports Radio Network. The boxing versus MMA aspect. Is boxing over? Is MMA taking over? But really, can they just coexist? Which is kind of what I want to see, what I think maybe Ike wants to see. It makes the world a better place for combat sports for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. More combat sports coverage and good fights. Like I said this on the air before, the Canelo Triple G fight happened 3 weeks after McGregor Mayweather. Yeah. I feel like that fight just pumped up everybody. Who knew if a couple years ago we would have ever got this super fight in Wilder and Fury? Maybe Joshua sees the dollars. Maybe he follows and jumps in the pool for big fights. You know, Conor McGregor and Floyd.
But here's the thing, though: is Wilder or Fury gonna get a shot at Joshua in the next 2-3 years? I mean, we're already talking about a rematch between the two, which is great. Listen, we love those draws of boxing. And I'm not trying to cause controversy, but we love the draws. It just stretches out that fight. I guess, like they say, like the Conor, like when we have Brendan Schaub in here, he goes Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz 3, it's always going to be there. But what's the next closest hanging fruit? There's plenty of fights for Conor. There's plenty of other fights for Joshua. That Wilder Fury fight, one of those two guys will always be around as long as they're fighting.
It's true. It's true. But to jump back to the point of, you know, it's the Joshua versus the Wilder, the Fury versus the Joshua, that's really only the fight that, like, I mean, the purists are going to yell at Lomachenko or Crawford, but it's those heavyweights are out there. Going back to our caller, I'm going to say his name, Troy in Baltimore. He said
Isaac said it. Isaac said it.
At Ike underscore CBS. He said that our sport, MMA, is oversaturated. First of all, this is how you build up stars. Second of all, that's not a bad thing because we don't know any boxers. We know Max. The DC Stipe card did just as well as the Wilder Fury card in terms of pay-per-view buys.
Yep.
The Conor McGregor did bigger. I'm pretty sure earlier in the year, if you looked at Stipe and Ngannou, that might have been close numbers. So you say oversaturated. I see MMA passing boxing.
And for anybody that is a wrestling fan, WWE fan, there was always that WCW, the ECWs of the world. Like, they're never going to surpass the UFC or the WWE in that case. But, like, these other promotions, Bellator, ONE, who just signed a deal with TNT.
Wow.
Now they're going to be...
Randy Johnson, oh my gosh, was that a knockout?
Was it 20... plus shows a year?
Yeah, and apparently it looks like it's going to be on big TNT.
That's
right?
That's
Law and Order into head punches.
Let's go. But think about it. So you have UFC, which is the mainstay right now in the States and globally too. Bellator is the second fiddle. But now you have ONE FC, you have PFL, you have this bare knuckle fighting that's starting to come up too. You have all these other smaller promotions like in Atlantic City and all across the country that are starting to build up and stuff like that. It's not a bad thing to, A, build up talent.
There you go. That's my biggest thing.
Yeah.
You can't get the talent if they don't fight.
Dude, Cody Garbrandt was on smaller promotions in Pittsburgh and then found his way to the UFC. But when he got into the UFC, there was already a fan base to him. And we're having issues that UFC, like a lot of people say, well, the product is watered down. No one knows half of the roster. Well, one of the ways to do that is to build with small promotions so that when they get to the UFC, it's like a AAA. It's like a AAA. And I don't want to downsize Bellator because clearly they're not going that. They're going more like independent, like Long Island Ducks. You know, hey, get the stud former all-star to be the coaches or the players or whatever it is. They still want to fight. Okay, give them time.
For the eyeballs. But they're still growing pure talent.
Oh, yeah. Aaron Pico is one of the best fighters right now. I mean, the kid, honestly, we know what his debut wasn't so good. But ever since then, his knockouts have been unreal. He could be the fighter of the year.
It's true. I like the build in the farm system with the fighters, you know. We're in the sink or swim type of era, you know. We wanted to see if Darren Till could have taken down Tyron Woodley. We wanted to see if Khabib could take down Conor. We want to see if Ortega's the next coming. You know, these undefeated, good-looking promotional stars that they could pump them up. Few will swim, many will sink, but that's fine. People are saying you're killing off the prospects. I want to find out if Borrachina is the guy or Paulo Costa. I want to find out if Israel Adesanya is the guy. There's always somebody else. If he doesn't make it, somebody else is going to make it. They say that the light heavyweight division's dead. Oh, Chuck's gone. DC's old. Shogun's old.
Oh, my God.
I just look at it now. You have Anthony Smith. Now you have Thiago Santos with the beautiful win against Jimmy Manuel. You have Dominic Reyes in the mix. All of a sudden, it's getting younger because you mentioned earlier the people that we don't know the names. That's my brother. He's like, oh, dude, what happened to Chuck? Rashad, what happened? Thiago Silva, all these Rampage Jackson, Wanderlei Silva. I go, it's a new wave. Don't worry. If you pay
Eric
attention.
Eric Anders is still making his way up there, too. Exactly. There's so many guys. Are they crazy?
Wave. It's a new wave.
What's wrong with your brother?
he wants the cereal box guys, you know? Yep. Like Dominic Reyes is
fine.
Cool.
Take your Anthony Pettis. He's still in the lightweight division, and he's losing fights. So,
true.
I mean, that's fine.
Take Conor, but jump in the Khabib train, you know? Like, there are cool guys to attach yourself to. You know, not everybody's going to be Chuck, not everybody's going to be Tito, but they're more spread out, and there's going to be a lot more of them coming up.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories, and again, it's not just the local fighters too. There's a lot of the Brazilians are coming back. There's the Australians for sure.
I mean,
there's tons of fighters across the map that are stepping their game. And
he
didn't
know who Whitaker was. He goes, is Wyman still the champ? I go, no. It's Whitaker. He's fine. You just got to pay attention. That's all you got to do, and you get rewarded.
I won't lie. There was a hiatus for me in the UFC a long time ago. And if you're out of it for like 6 to 8 months, you can miss a lot. Because, for example, how many times recently has interim belts been a thing?
True.
And now they haven't always been as much of a thing, but recently there are. So if you skipped 6 months this past year, you might have missed a lot, dude. You may have missed a lot. Now, true. Weidman hasn't had a title in a long time, but there are so many things going on. Like, for example, supposedly Kamaru Usman signed a contract to fight Tyron Woodley. Now, Woodley has not signed yet, but that's a fight that's in the making. And how did that happen? Because Usman beat RDA, Rafael Dos Anjos. Colby Covington was supposed to be the next in line, but he refused to fight Woodley when the opportunity was there. And now Woodley's taking some time off, and Dana's skipping him. You know, and that's what happens. They don't wait around in the UFC. And that, again, is one thing I love. Is there's not saying they're impatient, but they want to deliver for the fans as much as possible.
Sticking with the 170 division, and you did a great piece for radio.com talking about the welterweights. I think if you guys Google UFC or MMA, you'll see Pete and I work. Pete did a piece on the welterweights. I think that might be the only division that needs an interim belt and a regular belt because, like you said, Colby was the champ in June. Now you got Ben Askren wants a title fight. Kamaru Usman signed. Tyron's like, dude, my hand's still fucked up. He's like, can I get a break? He goes, McGregor's flying around the world selling whiskey. I'm trying to heal my hand to fight more for your company. Dana's killing them. The 170 is stacked. We just saw 230 fall apart, which, as I said, Askren was in the mix, and Robbie Lawler's out of that. They need to figure it out. I have no problem with Woodley taking his time.
By the way, the Askren, Robbie Lawler fight is moved back now. I'm not sure when they're making it, but
oh, I did hear this from our local Minnesota resource, Robbie Rosenhaus. He said, according to his sources, 235, which is the quote unquote Brock DC final pay per view, and I think Nate Diaz versus Masvidal is on that.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
It's well, a fun card.
If for you that don't know, and probably won't be 235, it'll be some other name because we don't know what fight's going to be where yet. But UFC 233, Anaheim, is canceled. I'm not sure if it's going to be rebooked for later in the year at Anaheim, but that specific card has been canceled.
Screwed twice, as you told me.
Back-to-back years. Back-to-back years. And it's been blown up. Like, first of all, it was a bad sign when Dillashaw and Cejudo got moved off of that card to go to Brooklyn. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing for Brooklyn, that they don't want to spice up their ESPN deal, for sure. I love that. I get that. They want to go for the hits. They want to play the hits. They want to go out swinging. If they're going to go out on ESPN, let's start with a bang. But you took off your main event for UFC 233. Dominic Cruz just got injured again, so he may be out of the Lineker card, which may mean, you know, I'm not saying they were going to pull that fight anyway, but maybe you push it back a couple of weeks, maybe a month or whatever. You reschedule it for March or something like that. Who knows? And then slowly, I think they pulled a couple other fights prior to that where it made sense. Just scrap the whole thing.
And I feel some of this, they're going to blame Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
They're going to say, well, you know, we got to have a belt on every single UFC pay-per-view poster. And it could have been Tyron versus Colby, an amazingly marketable fight. But they couldn't find a champion in time. I mean, it seems impossible with 6 to 8 weeks notice that they couldn't find a champion. But they're putting a lot of onus on this ESPN debut. And if you guys heard us last week, we went off on the Greg Hardy being on the same card, the ESPN plus one card, the first card, with Rachel Osovich, the DV victim. If you guys want to hear that, just go back one episode. We kind of
CBS Sports Radio, yeah.
I almost got a hernia screaming.
Oh, and by the way, if you haven't checked us out on radio.com, you can find our articles there as well. Again, you mentioned it before, the welterweight division I wrote about, but you've been also writing. You have one coming up this weekend, this week. Yeah, listen, this man has had plenty of time this week to sit down with a bunch of the guys over in Long Island. Talk about it.
Oh, I almost forgot about that. UFC on Fox.
What are you talking about? How'd you forget?
I was like, wait, is there an article I forgot about? UFC on Fox 31, the final Fox card, as we talked about before the UFC on ESPN era. I got to go to the Ray Longo's gym on Long Island, got to speak with Aljamain Sterling, Merab Dzhiwali-Wali. He corrects me 14 times for how I say his name.
And that was way off, I can tell you that. I don't know how to pronounce it, but I know that was way off.
It was. And then the great, the man of the hour, Raging Ally Kinta. He was fantastic.
But did you get to speak to Aljamain too? Or no, that was last. That was prior to different.
Yeah, I got to sit down with Al in the gym. That's on our YouTube page. We're building it up slowly.
Yes. By the way, did you see the fight that's? I think it's scheduled. Aljamain.
Jimmy Rivera.
Rivera.
I should have released the video before.
Oh!
I was like, local guy, you versus Jimmy? He goes, yeah, I could see that. I think he was in like contract talks with
him. I didn't want to give too much.
We're not the clickbaiters.
The Funkmasters is starting a podcast, according to him, this past weekend, too.
I thought about this when you told me he's doing a podcast. I go to the gym, interview goes well, as best as I could always do, and then he goes, I'm going to start a podcast. He's like, man, if this motherfucker's getting paid to record, he goes, I'm going to do a podcast.
Is that what he said?
No, I'm just thinking. Because
yeah, oh, no, no question. No
it's
question.
It's like we come across as, if we make it look easy, then we're doing a good job.
Yeah, of course. Lot to get to. We actually have some guests that
we
completely forgot about. Rashad Evans.
Sugar!
We talk about the light heavyweight division. This guy won. He was a former champ. Beat Chuck Liddell for the title.
Everybody.
Dude, had an amazing career. Hung up the gloves, but still is in broadcasting, doing the Fox Sports stuff. For UFC, I'm not really sure what's going on with that whole crew. If anybody's going to go to ESPN, anybody's going to make the move over. But Fox is ending their run. Actually, this week I believe is their final.
Yep.
Final run. But Rashad, takes some time. He joins us, talks about his broadcasting career and a little bit of stuff in the cage as well. So that's cool. And also Josh Copeland, We've been having PFL fighters on now for the past few weeks, and they're some of the more humblest fighters around. It's amazing because
they get that money.
Yeah, they're
like, and then they're dancing.
And they're walking
on
around
it.
With their their coach.
Bitches, y'all done slept on me. Y'all doubted me.
Is it Mink? Mink? Is that what it is? Fake Mink? Is it? Would PETA be on the fake Mink?
Probably not. Probably not.
Okay. That's the I can imagine Copeland with the fake Mink coat. After that victory comes down, and I don't even need the money to come down. Just give me that coat.
Just give me the coat. I'm still getting, I think, $200K as a loser, so that's not bad.
As he said, he's gonna, no matter what happens, he will be back for season two of PFL, and that's what you like to hear. It's not just like a stint. It's not a stunt. You know, it's not like, okay, here's money, cool, and we'll figure out what our next plan of action is for something else coming forward. No, this is a thing. This is going to be a league. This is like the XFL. For football, it's supposedly going to be a thing. It's going to be around. It's not going to be a flash in the pan. It's going to be around. I think PFL has long legs because the way they treat the fighters.
The money. That's it. $1 million fighters. I think 5 or 6 fighters are going to walk away out of MSG with $1 million.
Yeah.
Seriously. If you pay for it, they will come. It's that simple in MMA.
And they say that, well, you'll listen to Josh a little bit later, but he also said like they've treated him so well. Throughout this whole thing, and it's comforting, it's comfortable. He's a older fighter. He's been around for a while. You like to feel or see that these fighters who have risked their lives. I mean, listen, MMA is no joke. It's entertainment sport, entertaining, but it's a combat sport, and these people who really hurt each other. It's nice to see that they're getting rewarded one way or the other. They're finally getting rewarded. So
to play contrarian, you know, Dana White, obviously, everybody sees him on RNC going crazy on these pressers, not wanting to answer any questions from small-time reporters. If Carlos Silva got $320 million or however many odd millions dollars from a WMI, a WME IMG deal, you know, maybe that might have changed him. You know, Dana's in a different boat than Carlos.
Right.
But those fighters, the PFL guys on the way up and the WSOF fighters from a couple years past, they like the way that Ray Sefo and Carlos Silva are running their business, and they have to run this business very open, transparent, friendly, because they're just getting started. You know, you don't want a bad rep already. Dana White can literally do whatever the hell he wants.
He can and say whatever he wants.
Trump's
and he can
his boy.
He talks about Trump all the time. He talks about, you know, he signs Greg Hardy. He can kind of do what he wants, you know, and not saying that's a bad thing, not saying it's a good thing. It's a thing. And by the way, I know Brendan Schaub was in here, and he was saying that Golden Boy MMA was not a real thing. That was just an experiment.
Thank you for bringing this up.
But it looks like they're really diving into it more. I don't know if De La Hoya is going to have as much of a grasp
he
on
shouldn't.
It. No, because he clearly didn't have a grasp on the first event. But they're going down that road. And again, this is more promotion. Listen, it didn't hit a lot of households, that pay-per-view event. It did not.
I think it was like 20K.
But caused a lot of people talking about it. And that's, as I always tell people, if you're talking MMA, if they're talking about some sort of subject in MMA, right now, since it's not a top 4 or 5 sport in the States at least, it's good to be talking. It's good that you're talking about it, you know?
It's true. It's true. What we didn't talk about really quick, which is crazy how we gloss over this, is Max Holloway, UFC 231's main event champ. Is he the greatest featherweight of all time? This, I think, the greatest debate outside of the who's the MMA GOAT, whether it's DC, whether it's John Jones, whether it's Conor, whoever else you want to say, Ronda Rousey. But the featherweight specifically, Max Holloway, 13 in a row, beat Jose Aldo, Aldo twice. 2 defenses, Jose Aldo. 9 title defenses, as corrected by Damon Martin, from WEC and UFC. Kind of teetered off when he got to the UFC because of McGregor. Best run in featherweight history, like the Pedro Martinez, you know, like 7 years, but it was 7 fights or 8 fights of dominance. Gets out of the division, goes into boxing. I don't know who's the greatest featherweight of all time. I could tell you what I would need. I would need Max and Conor to fight again.
Yeah, but does it have to be a featherweight, though?
That's the thing.
You got 2 fighters that
I need your answer before the fight.
Yeah. Conor, first of all, wouldn't go down to featherweight again anyway. And Dana doesn't want Max in the featherweight division anymore either. So he,
perfect.
Yeah. So the rematch, I mean, but does that count, though? Does the weight class count?
You need to tell me then if it's A versus B, if it's Y versus Z, if it's just the same people and they agree at 150 or 155, sure. But if you're going to tell me, oh, Max moved up and that's not his way and he lost and Connor's the best, you're full of bullshit. I need your answer before the fight.
I think no matter what, you can't deny that Connor is the best striker in featherweight division. That is no doubt. No doubt.
Wow.
No doubt.
Yeah. And Jose and Max, man, they're right up there. Well, yeah. What does that mean, the best striker? And then who's the best wrestler? Frankie, I guess. But who is the best? What do you need?
I mean, is Max a more complete?
Is
Max a more complete package? I mean, sure, but that doesn't always.
Schaub's saying yes. Rogan saying yes.
What, to Max?
Anik saying yes. I don't know if they're trying to be hot takey or it's recency biased, but I'm like, guys, is everybody forgetting Max's defenses? Is everybody forgetting Connor knocked out Jose, which essentially led to showing the game plan of Jose?
But here's the thing, though, is that where Connor never defended a belt, and that weighs a lot. Max is now on, what, two final title defenses?
Two.
I mean, that's not a lot, but that's a lot more than Connor has ever done.
But then the Connor win over Max. I'm just playing.
Sure. I get it. I get it.
The Max Connor rematch.
That I do need. I would like to see that. And I think it's a different Max, and I think it's a different Connor. You know? It's tough. I definitely need to see that fight again for sure. But there's also a lot of other fights that are going to happen before that. Like, dude, there's so many fights. And Anik put up that poll, and however many people responded, over 50% said they want to see Connor versus Max. That's the next fight they want. And we had Jan Gomes on who said, I don't want that. I don't want that right now.
What did Jan say? What does he want?
Connor needs another practice fight before he gets back into Habib-Max type of territory.
Oh, sorry, I forgot that.
But honestly, let's be serious. The Khabib suspension, which is kind of what I've wrote in my recent article, the Khabib suspension has, that may linger for a while. So that Khabib and Max, the champ versus champ, not going to happen for a while. Tony Ferguson is not the interim, but he's up there right now. He has the best opportunity for the belt. He should be the number one contender. If he's not fighting Khabib, is he fighting Poirier, or is he fighting Connor, or is he fighting Max?
We have to figure out what Connor wants next, because is Connor still on the I get what I asked for?
Yeah, but listen.
He's still, how many more of that? If one more loss, is he off that?
I mean, no matter who Connor fights next, unless it's like an unranked opponent at this point in time, I think it'll still be a million-plus draw, no question. He has to win. For sure. The Cowboy Cerrone was interesting because I love Cowboy. I don't think that was a good fight for Cowboy, but everyone was like, no, it's great. It's very even. And I love Cowboy, but I want to see him fight somebody else in the lightweight before he goes to a heavy hitter like Connor.
It's a good mix.
Now, I don't want to see Cowboy versus Poirier either. I think that in the lightweight division, there's so much conversation, but it's got to be like Poirier versus Tony for interim if that's going to happen. Or you give Poirier Max an opportunity again, because that's another loss of Max's career early on, but that's his first loss in the UFC.
Wow. And I'm just now, I didn't know about this Khabib suspension lingering. You think that's going to affect who's
that
next?
That's pulled off till January. The hearing is going to happen in January, and who knows? I mean, they might just be, when it comes down to it, they might just be like, you know what? We'll just count it as time served. Move on.
Connor got arrested and was still able to make a payday. They're holding Khabib's money and he still can't get a sign to fight? Crazy.
Yep. Listen, Connor's in this mix too. He's not clear of everything yet. But it's more of Khabib still doesn't have his money yet. He doesn't have all his money. That being said, there's tons to talk about. There's tons to get into. We will be back, by the way, on CBS Sports Radio Network December 30th, 29th, depending on where you are. 12 a.m. to 2, December 30th, post-fight for UFC 232, Jones-Gustafson. Did you see that thing, by the way, about, like, it's a temporary license? But this fight, they're granting him a temporary license.
Nevada?
To fight. Yeah, it's not like he's back for good. It's like a temporary license.
Depending on how well the pay-per-views do.
That, yeah. Again, if he makes enough money, he could pay off his dues and be like, here you go. I mean, they're so sleazy over there. They really freaking are.
That's what I'm saying. Dana White's in their pockets with this Khabib thing, because Dana White can twist it to make Khabib work for him now, because Khabib's like, I don't need your money. Putin's going to fund me. I'm making a ton of money. I'm very happy. According to sources, you see him doing this all these media tours for Russian outlets or Middle Eastern outlets. He's like, I don't need the UFC.
No.
I mean, he could probably fight in court to get to Bellator, to get the one, get the PFL.
Javier Mendez said that he's got a couple fights that he's interested in, but besides that, he doesn't need to fight, right? He said he wants, he'll take the Tony fight, or that's the next one that's most obvious, but the GSP.
GSP. And GSP is not a big friend of Dana White, as always, over these last couple of years.
Why would he be? He only made a lot of money.
He's looking for a lot of money.
He only comes back for a fight, wins the belt, and then gives it back.
Yeah, that's what Dana White said. I don't think they would open a division for GSP because he's not going to defend the number two, three, or four against those guys.
No.
Do it at 55. If George, which hopefully in the near future we could talk to him, if George can make to 155, him versus Khabib, they should both fight to make that fight happen and say, you guys are holding us back from a paycheck.
Yeah.
That pay-per-view, I think, would do 1.6, 1.8.
Oh, that'd be great. GSP returning would be, a fantastic fight for sure and huge.
Want to get into Rashad?
Let's do Rashad right now because guy gives us really good insight. Not for nothing, totally different respect on this guy. The respect level just, I liked him a lot, had a lot of respect for him, but after this interview, just through the roof. So
one of our better ones.
Really cool no guy. Question. Really, really chill. So that being said, this is Rashad Evans with us on Outside the Cage.
This is Tyron, the Chosen One Woodley, UFC welterweight champion of the world, and you are listening to WFAN's Outside the Cage podcast.
This is CBS Sports Radio's and WFAN's Outside the Cage. We're being joined by the great former UFC light heavyweight champion, Sugar Rashad Evans. Rashad, how you doing, man?
I'm doing amazing, man. How about you?
I'm doing great. You're one of the few guys. That's how I know you're a veteran and a wise and a smart guy, because whoever asks how the host doing, I know they're people person and they're not nervous. But I appreciate that.
You got to, man. The host are people too. You know, if the energy ain't right with the host, then the energy is off all the gate, you know?
For real. Why did you have to do Tyron Woodley wrong, man? A couple times on the desk this past weekend at UFC 231, I saw Tyron stumbling on his words. I see you calm, cool, and collected. I've heard stories in the past with Bisping maybe elbowing DC, or he sees that DC will steal questions from Dominic Cruz. Can you take us behind the scenes of what it goes into your prep for like a big card like we seen this past Saturday? Take us behind the scene if you could, please.
Yeah, you know, everybody preps differently. Everybody has a different routine because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is just trying to get my ideas and our thoughts to flow on camera so then it sounds coherent. It sounds like we actually know what the hell we're talking about, right? So sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes you stumble over your words. Sometimes you get stuck on a thought and you can't get it out because at the same time we're speaking, there's somebody in our ear as well, too, and they're directing traffic. You know, it's the producers. They're directing traffic, and they're telling you
60 seconds.
Yes, exactly. So like, they're aware because they have to be aware of the time because each block that we do has a certain amount of time before we got to go to commercial. So everything is all predicated based off of that understanding. So we only got a certain amount of time to make certain points. So your points got to be like, they got to be a dagger. They got to be in and out and effective as possible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But sometimes you get in the flow and it just flows naturally. And it's just like having a conversation. And that's what, you know, that's what Marcellus Wallace, you know, taught me when I used to be at ESPN. He said, it's just a normal conversation. And that's what you always have to focus on. You know, whenever I find myself stumbling or I find myself being a little nervous, I just think to myself, it's just a conversation between me and my boys, and then at that point, it just flows, you know?
Yeah,
and everybody
man.
Has their own process. You know, sometimes, like Tyron was, like sometimes you like, because when we do our highlights, they don't let us know, like sometimes we'll get to look at them before, but they want to have like
a pure reaction?
Our real time talking through it, you know? So it's the first time we're seeing it as well, too. But we remember the fight, but you got to remember there's like 13 fights that we're watching, right? So you got to remember almost every single fight, you got to remember the story of the fight. You got to remember how it flowed. So sometimes we're talking through the highlight, and we're trying to remember the story of the fight. And then the highlight is longer than we expected, so then you kind of run out of gas a little bit, you know. And then you like, tapping your the guy next to you, like, yo, come and help me out, man. If they're cool, they'll help out. But if they're not, then they'll be like, they'll just let you just drown and just watch you, just like watch you on that island, just choking, stumbling for words, you know.
Well, fantastic, man. No, seriously, that was a beautiful description. I don't even think Marv Albert or Charles Barkley could, or Ernie Johnson could be that descriptive. That was fantastic, man. Again, we're being joined by Rashad Evans. Staying with the broadcast, was it easy transition? Obviously, you fought as soon as this year. And what's your son's name again?
Ezekiel.
Ezekiel, you're getting in your father's spot.
What's up, G?
We call him Easy.
Well, fantastic, man. He's got a great father. Staying with the broadcast, was it easy transition? You know, the adrenaline, obviously, as you're saying, there could be a 30 seconds, 10 seconds. We're off the air. We're going to be live. Was it easy transition doing what I consider the craziest, the most mad sport, being an MMA fighter, and transitioning into a Fox Sports analyst?
Yeah, absolutely, because when you have that, like I'm a gamer, so like sometimes I like mess up during rehearsal and it wouldn't be right, but the minute that red light comes on, then it's all action, and then I center in and I'm able to do it, you know. So that's something that I got just from competing so much, because when that red light goes, it's showtime, and then that other person, which I call Sugar, it takes over, because Sugar's more entertaining. You know what I'm saying? Sugar likes to entertain. Sugar's a show-off. He's a bragger. You know, he's a braggadocious. I don't even know what he's going to do sometimes. But it's just that energy, you know? And when that energy source takes over, then it is.
Sounds scary.
It's lovely. Yeah, it's lovely. It's a lovely thing.
Rashad, listen, you know, we've seen what you've done in the cage, but has anybody ever – on the console, have they ever like pissed you off enough where it's like, I just want to beat this person up right now, like I don't even care anymore? Like, I know that we have to debate a little bit, but you cross the line and it's easier to talk with my fist than the words.
You know,
Bisbing.
Bisbing is good. Like Bisbing can get on my skin pretty good sometimes because he doesn't stop. You know what I'm saying? Bisbing don't stop. Like most people, they be like. Like it's good to play off your host, like the other person you're working with, but then sometimes Bisbing goes too deep. Like, okay, Bisbing, you about to get it on, you know? But it's all fun though. I try not to take it personal, because when you don't take it personal and you just allow it to just be fun, and being able to make fun of yourself is being able to be, it's key as well too. If you take yourself too serious, then it's gonna be a hard night for you at the desk, because they'll sense that. And they'll get on you. If you're working with Bisbing or you're working with DC, DC will get you. DC is the biggest instigator of all time.
I believe it.
Of all time. There is nobody bigger than DC.
Now, it's funny because he loves to just kind of like lay it up there, and then he just like sits back and watches it work, right? Watches the magic happen.
back in the day, before DC is who he is now, we used to have this thing like he'll call me and he'd be like this. He'd be like I try to at least hate at least 30 hours a week. And he said, all 30 hours I was hating on you, all 30 hours a week, so you'd be hot, proud of it. And then he'll tell me how much he hated on me all week. And I'm just like, dude, you ain't shit for that. You know, but it's funny though. It was funny, but that's what we'll do to each other. We'll just be like, you're like, oh man, I've been hating on you so hard, man. People were talking about how good Evans is. I'm like, man, I used to take him down all the time, like nothing. No. Stop playing.
Again, we're being joined by Rashad Evans. Listen, you know, you've transitioned completely. You're done in the octagon. You've hung him up. You know, there's some fighters that still, like, I mean, I there's no chance that you sit there and watch these fights and go, I don't want to get, I, you want at least one more fight. You miss the action probably, but you see a opponent of yours, like a Chuck Liddell not too long ago for Tito Ortiz, you know, and you look at his performance, you look at that fight, you know, it was a little too late, I think, in his career to come back. But in your opinion, like, how do you see, do you have that urge still? Do you want to test the waters one more time?
No, I'm going to be honest. I thought I would. I thought like that would be it. Like I thought I'd be like, man, because you get addicted to the feeling, and that's the thing about that's the thing about the whole fight game is that, you know, it's not so much about, like, oh, I'm going to prove the fight that I'm tough, because here's how I break it down. It's like, when I first started, I would fight to prove that I'm tough. Now that I know that I'm tough, now that I've been in some wars, now that I've tested that part of me, and I know I'm not afraid when it comes down to it, now it just becomes about just that feeling, going through that feeling and then facing. Because after, like before you reach your level understanding of what it means to compete, you're still under the illusion of what it is that you're competing for. But once you discover it, then you just like, oh, okay. And then once you discover who you're competing against, then it becomes even more of a big, like a piece of the puzzle. Like, for instance, like you never, like you stop, like when you compete and you compete at the highest level, you're not competing against your opponent as much as you're competing against yourself. And that's just, and that's the part that is the part that makes people come back, because you're defeating the person deep inside yourself, and that feels good, because when you do that, you like before I fight, I have a roller coaster of emotions.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'm feeling great, sometimes I'm feeling high, sometimes I'm feeling low, sometimes I feel like I'm about to get my ass kicked, you know what I'm saying? But it's to be able to stay on the ride and ride it through all of the emotional turns and twists and whatever may come, and then be able to still ride that ride and then achieve what you plan to achieve and what you set out to achieve. That right there is the experience.
Wow.
And that right there is hard to let go.
Rod, Rashad, if I remember correctly, you were the one who says training camp is 90% physical, 10% mental, and then the fight week, it's 90% mental, 10% physical. Was that you?
Yes, it was. Dude. Yep. And that's something that me and GSP say all the time. You know, GSP was really big at saying that, you know, because that was exactly true. You know, he was one of the guys who allowed me to feel more comfortable with competing and dealing with the emotions that come with it. Because a lot of fighters, we don't deal with the emotions that come with it because you're under the illusion that, you know, okay, I need to be tough, and that's what a fighter is, da da da. Well, yeah, a fighter is tough, but I'm going to tell you right now, when you fight the best is when you're scared as shit. When you're scared, oh my gosh, there's some amazing things that happen when you're scared. You know, when you're scared, you fight amazing. So that's why I would look to tap into that feeling. And when the fights where I wasn't afraid, those are the fights I got my butt kicked, you know, because I couldn't bring up that emotion and that emotional energy of fear. It makes you do some crazy and amazing things.
Amazing, man. We need to get you on a podcast, maybe a CBS Sports Radio podcast. Again, we're being
right.
There you go. Again, we're being joined by former UFC light heavyweight champion Rashad Evans on Twitter at Sugar Rashad Evans, even though he doesn't need any more damn followers. Rashad, one of the things I wanted to talk about, you know, you talk about the achieving the ride, how much mental you're fighting yourself and achieving that high. One of the reasons that Rogan, Shab, us, we talk about there's no such thing as MMA math, because we never see what happens from the weigh-in at 4 p.m. on a Friday to the night of the fight. Stipe Miocic, he looks like this huge cuddly bear, and then come on fight night, he's knocking out people. I think that's the reason why, as long as Dana White never fixes anything, I think we'll never know the outcome of fights. Can you take us through that experience of the weighing and going to sleep, making sure you rehydrate and refuel, making sure you get enough sleep, and dealing with those emotions, and then the final walk to the octagon?
Yeah, because up until the point, up until you've weighed in and everything else like that, up until that point, it's still been about the show, it's still been a lot of pageantry and stuff like that, and it's just a routine. But after you make weight, and after all of the routine is done and is out the way, then it just becomes about why you're there. And then that, you're confronted with that, and dealing with that, the why you're there, why you're doing this and not doing something else, can take people down a dark path, or it can take them down a path of light. For some people, they're like, I'm doing this because this is my destiny. I'm doing this because, you know, this is what I dreamed of as a kid, and I can't see myself doing it any other way. And then there's some people that be like, man, I'm doing this because, you know, I really need to pay, you know, this rent, and I'm really not, like, I don't really believe in what it means to be the champion. and everything like that. So all those thoughts, they play out the next day because your opponent has those thoughts too. And if you get into the cage and your opponent, his why is bigger, the why he's competing, the motivation behind the X's and O's that we all know how to do, and we trained ourselves to do it so we don't have to think and it become automatic. If his why is clearer, then he's not going to have any delay on pulling the trigger, any of those other processes that come with fighting. But if your why is not clear and your why is not as big as your opponent, then you're going to get served up and he's going to be on top of your ass all fight.
Wow. Amazing.
Again, being joined by Rashad Evans.
Amazing.
You talk about like your why being greater, but you know, nowadays I see a lot of fighters, like we saw Cowboy Cerrone and Yancy Medeiros throwing down. They loved it every second of it, and they hugged and kind of almost kissed, and they brought the grandmother in afterwards. It was like a big celebration, and hey, I just beat you. You know, but was there ever a opponent of yours where you just like, listen, I don't hate you, but I'm going to have fun beating you up, and it's going to be a good time together, and it will rise. We'll make this fight rise together, and we'll maybe we'll do a little trash talking too, just for fun. But it was more fun than actual, I want to beat you up, and I want to win the belt, and the why is bigger in this one because I need to show how good I really am.
Yeah, I've had fights like that before where I didn't hate that guy. Like for instance, I absolutely adore Phil Davis. I love Phil Davis. I love his style. You know, I still like him a lot. You know, I watched him wrestle in college. He was one of those guys in college who I rooted for. You know, I like Phil Davis. But when it came time for us to fight, it was like, hey, it's me or you. And they're trying to say it's you right now, but I don't agree. You know, this fight means too much for me to get, and too much has happened for me to get this opportunity. And I need to get this opportunity because I felt at that time that the Jackson team did me wrong. So I needed to win that fight in order to get what I felt was my vindication. And, you know, that right there was, I went out there and I handled the business and, you know, I wasn't like, I talked a little trash, talked to him and I got a little trouble. You know what I'm saying? I got a little trouble.
For nothing wrong with that.
I should have said. But you know what though? It was part of the emotion, part of the fun of the whole thing. But afterwards, you know, I knew after I beat him, I'm like, yeah, this kid is going to be, he's going to be good. You know, because he was still young in the sport, and he was making a lot of mistakes. And I'm like, in a couple fights, he's not going to make those mistakes anymore.
It's true, man. He's doing fantastic. He's really evolved. We had him in studio last year for Bellator NYC. I didn't realize how like quirky he was. He's a funny cat. He's pretty sharp.
He is. Yeah, he's pretty. He's got a different kind of
very different.
You know, he's the Arsenio Hall to everybody.
Dude, that's perfect. That's perfect. My final thing. Again, we're being joined by former light heavyweight champion of the UFC at Sugar Rashad Evans. Dude, you touched on it being the Jackson camp. Pete and I segues, they're kind of loose here. But staying with John Jones, you know, I kind of connect John and Tyson Fury that I'm almost happy that Tyson Fury drew in his last fight. That way he has to come back a little stronger, a little more motivated. Seeing that Rogan podcast, I don't know what the hell would have happened to him if he knocked out Wilder or won the decision. He might have gained 150 more pounds. What I'm asking to you, in my opinion, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if John loses this next fight. I feel like he needs to be maybe a little humbled inside of the cage, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can see your perspective on that. You know, the thing, my thing with John, and it's always been with John, is that John has always been just so amazingly talented, and not only has he talented, but he has the mental fortitude that I haven't seen a lot of athletes compete with. He had this belief in himself, and he believes that he can't get beaten, and it is the fighting that's been able to, I feel, hold everything else around him, you know, together. You know what I'm saying? It's been that nucleus. So I don't know what John would do if he loses the fight and he loses it bad, you know, big time, because the fighting has always been his staple of identity. You
right,
can take
right.
everything else away from him. You can say, you know, he's this and that, but at the end of the day, you can't take away what he's done. You know what I'm saying? He's always been just an absolute monster inside the cage, a genius when it comes to movement, understanding how to sort out his opponents. You know, there's a there's a lot more adjectives and things I can say to expand on that thought. But, you know, at the end of the day, John has always been one of those athletes who's always fought against himself. And it's always the biggest fight against himself. And I feel at one point, you know, the load of fighting against yourself, it gets heavy. You know what I'm saying? It gets heavy. And the big thing with this fight with Gustafson is he going to be able to, you know, tap into that pure energy without fighting himself to the biggest extent? You know what I'm saying? Not fighting, because there's a lot that he experienced. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't want to bring all of that inside the cage. If he brings that inside the cage, he's going to lose to Gustafson. You know, he's got to be able to leave some of that out, but actually bring some of it in, because that's going to be acts as a fuel. But if he bring, it's like a perfect chemistry balance, to say the least. You know what I'm saying? So if Jones is to lose, now will be the prime time. And Gustafson, I believe, has shown the biggest improvements since John, you know, not been on his game, you know. And you know, his only thing with Gustafson I've seen is just his health. So if he's healthy and he's shown that he's growing in an off time, even when he's considered unhealthy, then John has some problems on his hands.
Again, being joined by Rashad Evans. My last question, you know, you talk about, you know, the prime time for someone to potentially lose a fight and how it changes their character. And, you know, we've seen some people like Francis Ngannou losing to Stipe, and he didn't come strong the next fight. He wasn't there. And that we've seen a lot of fighters that just not rebound well from a fight that they've lost. You know, does John Jones have that will that if he loses, he needs to come back stronger and adapt? Like, Conor McGregor lost to Nate Diaz, but he desperately wanted that rematch and desperately showed at least he could at least stand with Nate Diaz for five rounds.
Yeah, I believe that he does, but it would have to take, honestly, some digging, because you know, sometimes, you know, he has a championship mentality and he doesn't know anything else but success. But sometimes that can work against you if you do experience something other than perfection. You know, that can send him a negative negative space. But, you know, I like to believe and I like to think the fact that, you know, he's been able to mentally stay strong for so many fights. He understands himself on a competitive level in order to, you know, be able to get himself right competitively speaking. You know what I'm saying? I can't say the same thing in his personal life, because he's exhibited otherwise, but professionally speaking, as of now, I have no reason to doubt that he will be able to put something together, even if he does lose.
Rashad, amazing stuff. Seriously, thank you for taking us through the intricacies of a fighter, of an analyst, and I think you kind of gave a pick on 232. We're not gonna clickbait it. Easy, Evans, take it easy. Thank you for joining the podcast too, Rashad. Seriously, man, thank you so much.
No problem, man. Take care.
What's up, guys? This is Daniel Cormier, and you're listening to WFAN's Outside the Cage podcast.
Scared as shit. It makes sense. Being walking in there, and he faced the sport's best, Chuck Liddell, John Jones, Tito.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be scared shitless too.
One thing I didn't ask him, but is EZ going to be fighting soon? Is his boy EZ going to be allowed to fight in the cage anytime soon?
3 years old, man. I mean, on a recent UFC on Fox, they're building this cart for the Milwaukee thing, whatever their product, Road to the Octagon.
Yeah.
Barbosa's got his kid on the mat.
Oh, yeah.
At like 3 years old. So,
all right.
You never know. We might get a little sugar or mini blessed, right?
Let's go.
Everybody's kid now. It's a marketing scheme.
I don't blame him. It sells.
Mini blast. I'm like, get out of here.
Kids are there photobombing people. I don't know if you saw that picture where he's like ducking under chairs and stuff like that, getting pictures. It was awesome.
He's cute.
He is.
Your father needs a spotlight.
But not for nothing, though, too. Like, the one thing we talked about this off air.
Is Anthony going to be wearing some UFC gloves?
Oh, of course. He'll be wearing them in the house, but that's about it. But you and I talked about this, that like, it's one of those things. We saw him in the crowd. We saw him with the headphones on. But if you lose, if you get beat in front of your kid, that's kind of like, that scars them.
Yeah,
that's
right?
That's tough.
At 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah, like, daddy's getting beat up right now. That's, you know, that takes a lot of confidence to do that. That takes a lot of balls to do that. You know?
I thought he was losing his mind. I literally didn't think that Max had it in him this card. Me and Jan both saying Ortega. I thought this was the one
takes balls, confidence to get it done in front of your son.
Oh, dude, and he looked so good, Max. It was unbelievable. The striking, the significant strikes were unbelievable. The output that he loaded for four rounds, incredible. Where did that? Not that you didn't know where it came from, but for that long of a layoff, was just super impressive. Super impressive. That's why I would love to talk to a guy like GSP and ask him, like, hey, you know, you were off for how many years and you came back? You looked fantastic for first Bisping. That doesn't happen to everybody. A lot of people take time off and they get beat.
Cage rust.
Yeah.
As Connor's coach would say.
Yeah, well, I don't think it was cage rust. I think it was just more that you just can't stop Khabib. Not saying that you didn't practice enough or you weren't prepared enough, but preparation means nothing when Khabib's a killer.
Didn't matter, because it wasn't like Khabib was this amazing striker that you got touched and you're like, oh, I'm on Woozy Street. He tackled you, and, you know, yeah. You have your wits about him.
Easy excuse. Easy excuse. That being said, this man doesn't have any easy excuses.
And not a wrestler.
No. No, he's not. He's not a wrestler, that's for sure. Josh Copeland of the PFL, who's fighting for the heavyweight championship December 31st, Hulu Theater, in New York City. He joins us next on Outside the Cage to talk about his opportunity at $1 million.
This is Rose Namajunas, and you're listening to WFAN's Outside the Cage podcast.
This is Outside the Cage with your host, Ike Feldman, Pete Hoffman. As you've listened to our podcast week to week, we continuously have more and more PFL fighters because there's this huge, huge championship fight that's taking place at the Hulu Theater on December 31st. That's New Year's Eve. We're being joined right now by Josh Copeland, my man, who had one of the sickest knockouts all year long in the PFL and MMA, I would say, too. Josh, welcome to the program, and how do you feel right now?
Well, I am honored to be on the show with you guys, so I appreciate you having me, and yeah, thank you for taking the time out.
Yeah, man, and listen, you know, you've literally had, I go back to that knockout versus Alex Nicholson, I mean, geez, he's throwing back fists at you, spinning back fist. He opens you up, he's flying knees. Did you expect him to come so hard, and did it make it easier for you to just knock him out like that?
So to be honest, I felt like Alex was definitely one of the weaker links in the chain. And the whole reason I say that's just because he's good and he's successful because he's aggressive and he's reckless. You know, he'll throw things without setting it up and all that. So, and especially watching him, the way he runs forward with his chin in the air, I'm like, oh, it's a perfect setup for one of my go-tos, the big overhand. So, yeah, man, I saw that coming. That's how I visualized the fight going. Of course, not with the cut, but definitely knocking him out.
It was fantastic, man, and great stoppage by the ref because it looked like you might have killed him if you got to follow up with that. Again, we're being joined by Josh Copeland at Josh Cuddly Bear on Twitter. You know, during one of the broadcasts, I heard that you wrestled at UNC. I believe they said your teammate was Justin Gaethje. Man, it doesn't look like you're wrestling at all. You look fantastic on the feet. You seem calm, composed. You have a beautiful lead hook. How's the transition? I mean, it's been fantastic, but is that something you look to use, like a kind of Chuck Liddell sprawling brawl style?
So to be honest with you, where that came from was when I fought with Gaethje up at UNC. I know Chael Sonnen was doing the commentating, and he either got us mixed up or whatnot. But I did not wrestle with Gaethje. We're both teammates, and you know, we've been a part of Grudge and with Trevor Whitman for quite a while now.
Chael! We like transparency here, Josh. That's for sure. I appreciate that.
I would love to take credit for being a college wrestler, but that wasn't me.
Now, are you a cuddly bear? Are you a cuddly bear, at least? Just be honest.
That is true. I do love people, and, man, And same thing, just being honest with you guys, that's I all I want to do is see the best Josh Copeland that I can be and try to make a difference along the way.
But now that's an ironic name because Cuddly Bear and you know, you what you do for a living is, you know, clearly it's not just about, you know, knocking your opponents out. There's a lot more to the mixed martial art game. But the your job at hand is a little bit more, I guess, violent, as a lot of other people say. It is more aggressive. And how do you, you know, you're nice, a very easygoing guy from the brief time that we've had to spend with you right now. And it just, you know, once you step in that cage, you just seem like a different person. How do you turn it on and turn it off?
No, for sure. So the best way that I can explain it to anyone is I don't fight out of aggression or anger or any reason besides the fact that I just want to compete. And when I say I want to see what the best Josh Copeland is, like, man, I'm truly just a normal guy. I'm not gifted exceptionally in any one area. I'm not tall. I'm not long. I'm not fast, super strong. Like, I mean, there's nothing really special about me besides the fact that, man, I love what I do, and I just want to keep learning and growing. So when it comes to the Cuddly Bear, you know, I don't know if you guys knew it, but I went to college for youth ministry. And
okay.
For me, getting into mixed martial arts was basically a help keep the weight off. Well, that's where I wound up meeting my best friend, Justin Wren, training back in the day in Texas. And he's the one that wound up planting the seed in my head about fighting and thinking that I could do something with it. And yeah, him and I became main training partners, best friends, roommates. And when he got off the show, The Ultimate Fighter, and whatnot, we both moved up to Colorado together back in 2009.
Wow, fantastic. So are you located in Denver, Colorado?
I am.
Okay, and does Justin live out there? Because, I mean, we obviously see him on the Rogan podcast and see he's always moving around doing things. Is he stationed out there too?
Yeah, so he was. I want to say it's 2 years ago he wound up moving out to Oklahoma City. That's where his main organization, and they're out there raising money, building wells, doing all that stuff that's out in OKC. But it's funny because for me, I've asked Justin every time this year to if he can come out and corner me, and he hasn't been able to. And then this time, I called him up and I'm like, "Look, it's your fault. I am where I am right now. You better be there for New Year's Eve." So he's like, yeah, he's in for sure. So you'll get to see those golden locks.
Yeah, man, he's got the Zeus locks. It's fantastic. Oh, yeah. Now, obviously, if you're with Whitman and you're with Rose, that means there might be a connection there with Pat Barry, man, who's one of the best heavyweight strikers of all time. Do you get to mix it up with Pat every now and then?
Yeah. So when Pat and Rose moved out here, probably 5-6 years ago, I was the last couple of years of Pat's fighting career, I was his main training partner, main sparring partner, and all that. So and it's funny, I actually ran into Pat and Rose today when I stopped in to grab a new pair of Onyx gloves from Trevor, and I hadn't seen them in a while. I gave Pat a big old hug. He's Rose too. Those two people are down to earth, care about people. Life's not about them, and man, I look up to them in the aspect like they're always willing to help. It doesn't matter if you're the top guy in the gym or the, you know, just someone in there trying to lose weight. They'll stop and take time for any of them, and that's what I love.
It's fantastic, man. I can't wait for Rose. You know, she's been fighting in the city for a country girl. I believe she's from Milwaukee, living out in Denver. She's fought in Brooklyn. She's fought in MSG. For a country girl, man, she turns it on under the spotlights. But again, we're being joined by Josh Copeland at Josh Cuddly Bear on Twitter. Josh, I was in Denver the UFC Fight Week, and I got to go to the Factor X, to Ludwig's Place, to East End MMA. Didn't get to go to 303 training facility. I'm sure you've been there a ton with Pat Barry, but dude, it's just the people, the environment, it's so healthy and refreshing compared, obviously, to the NYC scene we got going over here. But can you sell some of the outsiders of why have you tried living somewhere else, but just Denver keeps pulling you back in? Of course, we know about the greenery out there but and the amazing fighters, but can you tell us what you love especially about Denver?
Well, to be honest, I'll say the weather. It's funny how people hear Denver, Colorado, and they automatically associate it with snow all the time, and it's fun. I mean, here we are mid December. I'm literally driving around. It's probably 55 and sunny right now. And to me, it's when they see Denver, it's from the commercials and the skiing and this and that. So they always associate Colorado with horrible winters and whatnot. But for me, I can honestly say I'd say last year I probably had to shovel snow twice. I believe that Denver is the second sunniest state next to San Diego, or not state, but city.
Wow.
Next to San Diego, we average like 300 days of sunshine a year. I love it. The average temperature in January is 44 degrees, which isn't bad. But don't get me wrong, we can definitely get some cold spells that go through here like anywhere. But it's I love the weather. I love the outdoors, and people like they like to be healthy out here. They're always biking and hiking and going. So it always gives you a little extra motivation.
It is beautiful, man. Again, we're being joined by Josh Copeland, PFL finalist for going for the championship on for $1 million, dude. That's no.
Oh yeah,
that's not a light sum of money. Am I right? How do you feel about that?
Is that a decent amount?
I think that's pretty good. I don't know. I mean, you know, you've been fighting for a very long time. You know, you're 36 years old. How does it feel to like? I mean, I've heard we've had a bunch of fighters on that have said PFL has taken care of you so far, even if you don't win. This is still a very good league, good promotion, good investment into your career just as a fighter, you know. But how does it feel to have this opportunity in front of you?
No, you're absolutely right. And it's to me, it's funny how so many people ask, oh, are you thinking about going to the UFC if you win this or whatnot? And I literally laugh. Like, to me, to me, it's about principle, and there's nothing worse than being in a place where you're not respected. You're not what's the word? I mean, there's no appreciation for you. You know, with the UFC, it's like, cool. Hey, here's the contract. Sign it, or the next person will. You know, like there's no negotiating, whatnot. You know, and I mean, props to them for building what they built, but to me, it's the way they use and abuse their fighters is absolutely ridiculous. And that's I always go back to the fact my one of my teammates, Curtis Blades, he's when he was ranked number 9 in the world fighting Mark Hunt, number 5, UFC is paying him 26 and 26. And don't get me wrong, 26 grand is a lot of money, but you're fighting the number 5 guy in the world, you know. And to me, people don't understand the fact that 30% goes out to coaches and management, you know, minus taxes. Then you divide it by a 3-month training camp, and number 9 guy in the world's making what, 3 grand a month, 4 grand a month.
It's a little rough,
you know. And I'm just like, oh, dude, it's a slap in the face. And for me to be a part of the PFL and the way that they have treated us fighters. Even in the regular season, they were paying me more than double what the UFC was paying me, and it's just cool. It's cool to be a part of something that the people actually appreciate you, versus you just thinking that you have to bow down to them. You know, so man, PFL is awesome. That's I'm with them. Hopefully till I retire.
Well, Josh, you know, the one thing that we appreciate is a happy fighter. You know, like, we want to see, like, we're entertained. This is a form of entertainment for a lot of the fans. You know, it's not just a career. It's not just a livelihood. It's a lot of casual fans. They love this stuff. So it's nice to see that the athlete, the fighters are actually, you know, happy with what they're doing with the promotion, you know. That being said, I want to go back to, again, we're being joined by Josh Copeland. You talked about Alex Nicholson, you know, that you saw his holes in his game. And he was a little open-ended with his fighting stances and stuff like that. And you were able to easily pick apart Alex. There is a UFC fighter by the name of Greg Hardy who's supposed to be making his first fight appearance January 19th in Brooklyn. Now, I don't know if you've seen any of his fights at all, but to me, he just doesn't have a complete package, let's say. He's got knockout power, but besides that, it's a lot of holes. Have you been able to see Greg Hardy, his previous fights, and what is your opinion on him fighting in the UFC?
So being honest, I do fight MMA, but I don't really follow MMA. So I do not know the name. If it's a teammate fighting or one of my favorite fighters fighting, crazy exciting person, I'll definitely tune in. But I've never bought a pay per view or anything like that. So
how are you able to block? Like, I'm out of curiosity. Like, do you look at the headlines? Do you see what's kind of going on, or you're just focused on training and stuff like that, where you don't see anything?
No, I'll look at the headlines and, of course, the talk around the gym.
Right.
And like I said, you know, I'm all about the team and whatnot and showing support. And, you know, that's part of me going in there with these guys, you know, especially being able to help Alistair out with his last camp and being there for Curtis the last 2.5 years that he's been in Denver or however long. And, man, it's fun watching especially Curtis evolve with the striking and understanding of movement and this and that. But no, I mean, I don't follow it too much. Like I said, unless it's one of my favorite exciting fighters or a teammate that's fighting.
So when you're done doing your 1-a-day, 2-day, or 3 days, getting ready for PFL 11, December 31st at the Hulu Theater in our backyard, MSG, can't wait for this. Josh Copeland on the finals, trying to get that $1 million. So when you're done training, what lights the Cuddly Bears fire at home? Is it a Netflix and chill? Are you a movie guy? Do you just listen to podcasts? What do you like to entertain yourself with?
Man, to be honest, I've got a 5-year-old little boy, and dude, he is. And I never knew how much I would love being a father until I was one. And yeah, he's my little bear cub, and man, he's all boy, and I'm his human jungle gym. So, so yeah, when I'm done here today, I'm gonna go pick him up from school. He's in kindergarten now, and man, we're gonna go home, get his homework done, eat some dinner, and then we're gonna wrestle. So
that's awesome, Josh.
He loves it.
Well, listen, congratulations on everything. Best of luck, December 31st at the Hulu Theater. We're looking forward to a fantastic fight, and whatever happens, will you be back for season 2 of the PFL League?
Yeah, there is no doubt there. I will be back 100%.
Fantastic, brother. Fantastic.
Josh, again, looking forward to it, and thanks again for the time, man.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Appreciate you.
This is Francis Ngannou. You are listening to WFAN's Outside the Cage Podcast.
Copeland, dude, he's awesome.
So laid back.
Can't believe that he didn't know who Greg Hardy was, but...
What world does he live in?
Especially with Curtis Blaydes being a partner of his, you would think that they discussed that he's up-and-comer in the heavyweight division. Not saying that Greg Hardy is going to be stylistically in the top rankings anytime soon, but the fact that he's even in the UFC heavyweight division is just outrageous. You'd think that would come across, but no idea who he was.
After visiting Denver for, I think, 4 or 5 days, I can understand, man. They're literally in their own world.
Well, good for them. Good for Josh getting opportunity for this huge pot of gold, I guess you could say. But also just being in PFL, because, again, a lot of promotions are coming up. What do they do for fighters? Like, Bellator clearly is the Yankees of MMA. They're the ones who are willing to overpay everybody, and people have no problem with that.
Is the talent level always as good? No, but the names are great. Names are always great. Now, there are some young talent come up, especially like look at the 2019 Yankees. They got a lot of young talent. Mm. Bellator's got a lot of young talent, but you're kind of focused more on the names. PFL, no, there's not a lot of names. It's just talent. And they're just trying to get the best fighters around, and they're saying, here's an opportunity to do it. You might be, might not be the best, but here's a good opportunity.
I'll give you the prime example. This is as simplistic as I can make it. You know the ESPN montage, maybe when they're coming in or out of break, it'll show a baseball player, a basketball player. There's a slight clip of Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
There's also a slight clip of a Bellator fighter. The guy with the knee, he's kneeing from like 8 feet away. That's one of those young prospects.
Yep.
Fedor's not jumping across the octagon or Bellator cage anytime soon. It's one of the prospects.
Fedor's not jumping into the cage either. He's barely stepping over wherever he's got to step over. You had an opportunity, by the way, to sit down with another Long Island fighter. We were talking about some Long Island fighters from Longo's camp. Pete Sell.
Want to save this one exclusively for the podcast. You know, like I said earlier, we talked to Marab, Aljamain, Ally Aquinta, but Pete Sell, he's been around the block a bunch of times. Former bouncer on Long Islander, hey. UFC fighter. You know, he's one of the pioneers for Long Island MMA before Chris Weidman. Cool guy. Got a couple minutes to talk with him.
Very cool. Pete Sell with Ike Fellman come up next on Outside the Cage.
This is Cowboy, and you're listening to WFAN's Outside the Cage podcast.
This is CBS Sports Radio's and WFAN's Outside the Cage. We're under the Ray Longo beautiful training facility, and we're joined by former UFC fighter, now coach, and everybody, Pete Drago Sell. Pete, how you doing, brother?
I'm all right, man. How you
doing? I'm doing good, man.
It's down here, man, helping coach the upcoming guys, having fun doing that. Not fun being Satellite Susie, but you know it's nice seeing guys get the experience to fight in and the.
You could take the call. This would be great.
What?
You could take the call.
Are you going to take the call? What you want?
That's my girl.
I'm doing an interview. I'll
call
you back. I'm sorry. You say it's nice to see the guys take the experience and do something with it. I forgot.
it's nice. I guess passing along the experience you have with things and. Get asked a question, guys do the tournament, they win, they come back, yo, I hit this, or it's sparring, they did something. It's definitely a rewarding feeling in that sense, you know. It's always way better when you're out there doing it yourself, you know what I mean? But it's the fight game is something I always love, you know. It's too much of my life. I mean, I started training with Matt Cerebrin when I was 17, 36 now, so I've been doing this a long time, so. I love the jiu-jitsu, love the fight game, love everything about it, you know.
And you're one of the pioneers for Long Island M&M's. Long Island MMA, man. And you brought that swagger, that toughness, and that grittiness that a lot of people slept on, I feel like. They think Brazil is a tough country, Canada is some of these beasts, or Russia. It's like, man, look at the people that have come out of Long Island, especially that are fighting in the UFC and that have fought in the UFC.
I tell you, it's crazy, too, because for a while I feel like the general UFC and everybody who's from there is big West Coast people. Like everybody's West Coast, like all the top guys. And now I feel like New York is starting to want to come up, and it's getting better and better over here, and we're East Coast is starting to take over a lot more. It's going to be good.
You pissed it wasn't legal pre-2016 in New York?
Are you kidding me? Hell yeah. Who don't want to fight the Garden, man? You kidding me? That's crazy, you know? Like
Weidman doesn't want to fight there anymore. He's had tough luck there, man. I'm glad he got the win in Nassau. Like, honestly, that win over Gessler.
Such an awesome night. Yeah, I was there for it. Oh, my God. The place erupted. That was so great, you know? I mean, what's better to do it in your hometown like that? Have everybody... It's nothing. Can't be nothing better than that, you know. Can't imagine that.
And so it's like I said, man. Long Island's been fantastic. And now looking at the younger cats, when you see Aljo or when you see Iaquinta, even Marab or Sasaki, you know, they're not from Long Island. In case anybody didn't know that, they're from Japan and Georgia. It's what do you feel the difference? Is it that it's YouTube and they're learning faster and it's more global, or is it that they have more experienced trainers like you and fighters prior to them? I'm trying to figure out what the question is. I swear I'm sober.
You don't believe him.
But it's like with the young cats, what have you seen the difference from when you were in their position to now watching them train on a daily basis? Is it that they're incorporating more striking or they're learning from outside sources? What have you seen the difference?
As far as the difference in this, I feel like... back when I was coming up, it was more like, not a crapshoot, it was more like kind of finding your game. Like everybody, they had like style versus style, and everybody's kind of like adding stuff to their game, and the sport evolved a lot these days, where everybody's kind of good at everything. You have to be good, really good at jiu-jitsu, really good at wrestling, really good at striking. You have to have all the pieces and be able to put them together the right way. You know what I mean? So it's evolved a lot, and we have to be able to technically know every aspect of the game and put it all together nicely, you know? And that definitely, the game has jumped up way higher than since back in the day, you know?
Have you seen a lot of people, new guys walking into the gym that they bring that Conor McGregor, they think it's all just about the knockouts and maybe they're not in it for the long haul?
Have you seen it? How many freaking people have come in that have come into the gyms and just like, yeah, I want to fight in UFC, and just did. And so, have you done anything? And they have done nothing in the past. They just want to fight. All right, guy. There's just so many people. It's a test of time, you know. I'm not saying people are bullshit, but everybody, people that talk, it takes time. Unless you put your years it takes years to be good at fighting. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times nowadays, especially, you have to put your skill in one area. Guys either come from a striking background, they've wrestled their whole life, whatever. There's something they have in the bag. They're jiu-jitsu champions, whatever it is, they have something in their bag where they bring it to the game. They have something, their specialty. You need that. You have to have something that you're one of the best at to be able to make it in this game these days, just hands down. And even then, it's still tough. I mean, there's so many freaking guys. I mean, but at least if you have that, at least you have a good base. If you just kind of just floating around your channel, you got some work to do, you know. It takes time.
Are young kids still in it for the right reason, or they want that paycheck? Obviously the payment's nice, but it's like, are you starting to see that fighting is transitioning into more of a sport instead of combat?
What was your question? Like,
damn, usually I just lay it up. Sometimes people, no, I just no, let no, them no, I'm no, trying to
well, I'm gonna tell you this I'm gonna tell you this but the I think it became more of a sport. Like it's more everything's more sanctioned now. It's different rules, and people accept it more as a sport. Everybody had like bleed on their forehead. It was like a different time. You know what I'm saying? It was like they didn't care. One of the guys to see two guys fight. Now it's like different, where it's more who's the better athlete to put it all together, and it definitely and that's kind of what you react with something like that. Like I think definitely more.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, the music.
I'm almost done, I swear.
We're almost done, I swear.
Longo MMA is definitely hating CBS Sports Radio's Outside the Cage, but Pete Sells being very patient with me. Pete, you obviously were a warrior inside the cage. Do you have any bar stories you want to talk about?
Bar stories? I got to... So many.
What's your record in the bar with jeans on?
Dude, it's fucking. Honestly, it's actually retarded. It's so many. It's, again, this is what I'll say about that. You can't even count me because I bounced for 5 years, so I've been so many. I can't even. It's retarded. So many times.
Is it better now that like people like they know more about the sports? Maybe back then everybody thought they see a movie and they know what they're doing. Like, do you see the difference at least in that aspect?
Oh, of course, but I'm not in the clubs no more like that. Yeah. I mean, I remember at the time, I remember, you got to remember, I come from a different time, man. I got, when I fought UFC 51, my first UFC fight, like, I'll tell you guys, it was at that time I got paid two to show and two to win. 2,000.
Okay.
That's it. Now I was a swing bat, which is mean that I got sprinkled in between, like, between co-main event and main event. Before maybe I have a TOT belt for maybe. I forgot who it was. It was like a big, like, you know, for me, I was mainly a big event center. Everything, yo, you made it. Dude, next week I was in the bar bouncing. You know what I'm saying? I literally fought, and I was in Mary Bay in Vegas. And then next week, I'm making $100, whatever it was the night. It was a different time. Now the sport is more. You're able to get, like, you know, more sponsors and more people to pay, like, to be able to fight. It took me. I bounced so even when I was fighting UFC, even with the fight show. I still bounce every weekend. Eventually, finally, towards the end of the I was, like, kind of got out of bouncing. I had a couple nights, some bad things they happened. A couple times people got out of hand, a couple bad things happened, and I had to get out of there. Eventually, because my boss was just like, whatever. And it's being in that scene, though, trying to fight professional is no good. Because you're around drinking all the time, and I'm not the same with that. You know what I mean? So it's not, hey, I won. That's one. You know what I'm saying? It's not the good best for your health. You know what I mean? For your training regimen, staying up real late, have to work to 4 a.m. You know, home at 5. It's
the ladies must have been nice part of it.
What's that?
The ladies must have been a nice part of it. We won't talk about it.
That always is, man. You know what I mean?
My wife doesn't know where I am. I'm going to show her the video for proof.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I tell you, I love my girl, love my son, love my family, you know?
Well, let's transition. Where do you see the sport now? It's on ESPN, man. Who the fuck would have thunk it years ago? It's on ESPN now. Where do you see it going over the next year or 5 years now that it's on the biggest sports platform?
I mean, I guess it's going to grow exponentially. Is that the right word?
In Denver, when I was at Camozzi's gym, I didn't know the word eccentric. And Camozzi finished my sentence. So
Camozzi's good people, man. No, but what was the question?
Where do you see the sport going?
Oh. Man, I feel like it's so big now, and it's gotten. They already done it all. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like now what they, like, I don't know, see where exactly the whole sport's going. It's going to grow so much. I feel like they're going to have to find those new stars they're going to have, like the big money stars, and that's where it's going to go. And it's kind of like, I think they're fighting also because they're in a different, I can say avenue or whatever it is, because they bought the thing for so much money. They're trying to get their money back. So it's like they're trying to make money too. And you can't blame them. You know what I'm saying? They put so much money into it. They put a lot into it. They got to make their money. Eventually, maybe after that time, it'll go back to something else. You don't, like, you know. So as far as the exact way where I think the sport's going, man, you got me, man. Right now, I think what I do know is that the level's going to keep going up and up, because people that back in the day didn't even know what UFC was. You know, I was fighting. You know, you do UFC. It was like, nobody even knew it. Nobody even gave a shit. Like, nobody cared. You know, nobody, like, even knew.
The worst was humping on the floor. Oh, I don't want to watch this. Like,
that's right. Because
you get your ass beat.
Just a different thing. I know it's so big, but I feel like the level's going to get bigger and bigger, and it's such a. It's nice, man. It's nice that, I guess, I was in the beginning stages of everything, but it's something you want to do for the rest of your life. You know what I'm saying? It's something, and I get physically you can't do it the rest of your life, and it that's one that sucks about being a fighter, is that you can't do it forever. You know?
Well, man, it's like, honestly, I appreciate you teaching the youth and, like, sharing your knowledge with the young fighters. It's like, you've been through the gauntlet, and now you paved the road for them. It's a lot easier. And one of the guys is Ally Quinta. He's fighting. My last thing, I promise. We'll get you out of here.
Aya Quinta. Aya Quinta. I'm helping you out, buddy.
It's Quinta?
Aya Quinta.
Oh, I said Quinta.
Aya Quinta.
I acquaint-
like the hotel.
I got you, Al. I'll look it out for you.
Can you tell us something? He's got a big fight next week against Kevin Lee, the rematch. Can you tell us something about Al that maybe people might not know? Like, we all see him on social media and in front of the mic. You know, he's this brash Long Island guy. But, you know, we have some hearts. A lot of people might not believe it, but Long Islanders got some hearts. Can you tell us something behind the scene that, like, you've seen in training with Al or hanging out with Al that you could tell the audience?
I'll tell you, man, I just seen that kid fight through so many, like you know, at the time of tough injuries and stuff, and he went in one big fights, man. He's going out there with some balls, and he's gonna bring it to Kevin Lee, man, straight up. You know what I mean? And that, at the end of the day, it's a fight, anything can happen, but I know Al's gonna be out there bringing it, and you see what happened last time. He got the nod, so we'll see what happens. You know?
Appreciate it. Hopefully they get that Khabib rematch, man. And again, yeah, Pete.
There you go. And that was on short notice. You know, look what he did with him. He kind of made I feel like Khabib human in a way, because he's so many guys that trained so hard for him and got finally got to fight him and trained how many the whole camp. Alan last minute fought the guy. He did pretty good for not having for hours notice, you know what I mean? A couple hours, let's fight this guy, whatever it was, you know what I mean?
He did really good, man. He keeps Long Island on the map. I appreciate you, appreciate him, appreciate Chris and Ray Longo for bringing me into the gym, man. Good luck with you, and good luck with
Long Island MMA, Long Island MMA, Long Island MMA, Long Island MMA.
Oh, we'll keep it.
Whatever.
And we won't tell the stories, the other story.
Woo! This is Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, and you're listening to WFAN's Outside the Cage podcast.
Good job by you, Pete Sell, man.
Appreciate it, man. My Long Islandist came out with a fellow Long Islander. He's a great guy. And there was some story that happened with me and him at a bar a couple of years ago, which can't ever say unless he ever wants to say it on the air. But it's when I saw him, I go, "You! That bar, remember this?" He goes, "Oh, shit, what happened?" I go, "Pete, relax. We're going to do an interview."
We'll save that for another time. No, that's great.
Yes, please.
You'll have to tell me off air. But that's awesome, dude. Good stuff. Really good episode. Rashad, Josh, Pete, thank you for joining us. Again, we'll have you'll have your piece coming up in a Friday.
It's like homework, man.
I know. We got to dive into it, man. Dive into the final UFC on Fox.
Watch all the everybody just tears it down. Fox is like, "This crap sport.
This is the worst thing ever."
Karen Bryant's like, "Dana White, you can suck on these."
Again, I'm not sure where everyone's going. Jimmy Smith supposedly his contract has not been renewed by ESPN. He's somebody that's going to be not should say ESPN, but UFC has not renewed his contract, so he's a free agent.
So I think Bisping's doing big pay per view.
Is that right?
It said he is being brought for the ESPN, which is like, what does that mean for Felder? You can't miss out on DC.
Well,
Dominic Cruz, what are we doing?
I saw, was it this card coming up? But is Anik, DC, and Felder?
For the 232?
No, I think it's Milwaukee.
Oh, for Fox? That's a great card.
I think that's I thought I saw that. Yeah, I think they said it's the first time that they've ever had those three together, so that'd be cool. Maybe they give it to Felder one more try. I don't know. I have no idea. This is one thing that Isaac and I definitely don't know about is the inner workings of the analyst. But they're all really good, and what Fox did with the UFC tonight was pretty awesome. Hopefully ESPN, you know, clearly Ariel, Chael, they're good. Hopefully they could add to the cast of characters over there as well. It'd be nice.
I agree.
All right, cool. That being said, we will be back next week with some more stuff. We hopefully will have some more studio guests for you. Don't forget, December 29th, UFC 232. We will be on CBS Sports Radio. And follow our stuff on radio.com. Also WFAN.com and CBSSportsRadio.com as well for all our audio, our podcast posts and stuff like that.
Working on some way to get you guys to see us visually.
Yeah, there's YouTube for now, but we're working on some more ways. @_OutToTheCage on Twitter. He is @Ike_CBS.
He is @TheHawkWFN. He lives at 24 Maple Street Drive.
There you go. In Albuquerque, New Mexico.
That's John Jones' address.
Is it really?
No, imagine.
Troy from Baltimore. I found you, motherfucker. I found you.
Troy, I didn't do it, man. It was all like. That was all like. Again, appreciate you guys listening, and we will see you guys next week.